Welcome, Eric and Finn, to the stage from Mevo. So these two gentlemen, we're so happy and proud to have them here at this event, not only because they represent that little one pin, you know, right there on our wall of fame of lovely clients all over the world, but first and foremost because they are pioneers in their regions, in Australasia, and because they are real societal, environmental impact makers, inspiring leaders for a whole new generation of startups and entrepreneurs over there in New Zealand. Mevo was born in 2016 with three cars, as you heard yesterday, and today they've grown to 220. They have a community of 20,000 users, both in B2C and B2B, present in the four major cities of New Zealand. And they also have that one number that scares me because of my job, but that you will love, I'm sure. It's the $0 marketing budget. So how do they do that? I'm all eager to hear about your path and that beautiful success story from day one. Thank you again for being here. And I leave the floor to you.
Morning, everyone. Well, we might tuck in. We've got quite a bit, so we'll move at pace. And I think we're just going to back and forth a little bit. So start with you, Ben.
Great. Morning, everyone. Great to be here. Thanks for having us. I thought today it was good for us to just start with some of the New Zealand context, like where we are, what's going on over there, because it's quite far away, it's fair to say.
Not part of Europe.
New Zealand is a pretty small country. We just crossed over 5 million population. There's sort of two main islands, if you don't know, so North and South Island. We're only in the North Island today, so it's kind of, yeah, it's part of it. But you get some things like, you know, land borders, no one can drive your cars to another country. It's like a few nice things there. We have, like, really for any big country, we have the highest car ownership rate in the world. So higher than the US, higher than New Zealand. There's only a couple of principalities in Europe that are above New Zealand per capita. And we also have this very curious thing where nearly all of our cars are very old. They come from Japan, ex-lease, and they come to New Zealand, and people drive them until they die, and that's it. So we have this really kind of huge thing where it's 14 years the average age of a car, which is one of the oldest in the world as well. We really have very low investment in anything other than car infrastructure. Up until quite recently, we obviously now, along with the rest of the world, are having real progress politically with changing that, but yeah, we have a lot of what they call the quarter acre dream, which is, you know, a quarter of an acre section with a single family dwelling. Like in Auckland, it's just miles and miles and miles of just houses with backyards, which makes it very difficult to do anything other than cars. And yeah, when we launched there, really, there was only one competitor who'd been around for, I think Eric said yesterday, like 7 or 8 years, but with no real material growth, sort of like a zip car analog. Yeah.
Cool. So 2016, let's see. We launched three cars, station-based, and we were targeting to go free-floating, and so we stuck with on-demand station-based. Terrible. Worst of both worlds. Definitely would not recommend. But we did want to position the brand to make sure car sharing, because it was relatively new to the market, was seen as aspirational and better than car ownership. So we managed to tee up a partnership with Audi New Zealand, three adorable little Audis on the waterfront. Quickly after, we swapped over to Vlog, much better. And then throughout 2017, so 3 to 15 vehicles, still pretty tiny. What else? Yeah, some marketing partnerships.
Set up an office,
that was cool. We've been working out of my lounge for quite a while. There's some really famous New Zealand startups that started in the same street as us, so. 2018, so we popped over to free floating at that point, and that was first in Australasia, expanded to 30 cars, still a bit of a stretch, free floating with 30 cars, it was, the density wasn't quite there, and then started building out our own software to complement the Vlog system as well. Thank you.
Yeah, 2019 was probably our first really big year, I would think about. And one of the main things that we did that year is we moved from Vlog's old platform, the .NET platform, to the newer IMA platform. So I don't know if anyone else had an experience of being on .NET, but the new platform is like, it's night and day, you know, in terms of the APIs, the functionality, what you're able to do with the VLog product. And so that immediately led us kind of, you know, we started building software the previous year, but now that we had all this connectivity and we could actually connect into VLog properly, it really allowed us to, I guess, level that up. So we pretty much straight away started working on our own native apps and got those out the same year. We also started introducing variety in the fleet. So our second vehicle model, which was the Volkswagen Polo, so as opposed to the Audi, which was sort of $25 New Zealand an hour, the Polo was 15, so it's quite a lot cheaper, and we immediately started to see a whole new market open up for that, both people who are, I suppose, more cost sensitive, but also something that we didn't necessarily expect, which was the people who were more brand sensitive, where for them, they would never drive an Audi because it was almost like too fancy. So that was an interesting takeaway as well. Some decent expansion in the fleet throughout 2019, and then, as you can see, we were getting ready to launch in Auckland in 2020, but obviously, yeah, everyone's plans for 2020 got a little disrupted, I think. Initially, we had, you know, in New Zealand, we had these very, very hard lockdowns, some of the hardest in the world. You know, really, you can only leave your house to exercise and to go to the supermarket, and we had, in sort of April and May of 2020, we had 7 weeks just total. Everything is closed. You know, there are like birds in the street because they haven't seen any people in a couple of days, and they've moved back into the city. Like, it was totally dead. And we got classed as non-essential. We managed to fix that then later on. You know, for subsequent lockdowns with the government, but telling them the story. Hey, some people who use our service, they don't actually have a car. So if you take away their car sharing, they can't get to the supermarket. Right, it's nothing else running. So. We built a lot of software during the lockdowns. That was really an effective use of our time with nothing else happening, nothing operational. Built a new B2B product, which was then, you know, powered by the VLog B2B. And then really the other thing we did in 2020 is we knew that we would need to come back, and so we figured out a lot of ways to do things a lot cheaper on the vehicle side in terms of vehicle supply, financing, a lot of those things. So, you know, took the time, I guess, to work on the business rather than the business.
You were deploying straight into production at that point, right?
Someone using it.
So from then on, we had a day by day, week by week revenue recovery strategy in place, and we were tracking it and updating the team every morning, and just really, really tight in team operations to rebuild to where we had gotten to before. Previous to the lockdown, it was a hockey stick of actuals, and then we just had this giant valley, which looked like a valley of death, but we came out the other side.
Yes.
We swapped over, as Finn mentioned. One of the key things we did is we formed this new partnership with New Zealand's largest dealership network, and we actually found some really clever ways to leverage basically buybacks. So they'd end up buying the cars from us before we even bought them. And so we'd hold them with no depreciation, which is happy to talk about with anyone offline. But the other thing that came out of the partnership is they had launched a small car share in Hamilton, which is the fourth largest city in the country, and they found that instead of focusing on their dealership, their board meetings were being taken up with, you know, 15 cars on a car share. So we picked it up and got a pretty strong partnership with them out of that as well, and that gave us a first chance to iterate on a new city launch. So it was kind of like a test run before going to Auckland. The other thing we did is we established the Flex and the Loop sub-branding. So Mevo Flex, Mevo Loop. And we've been experimenting with Back2Base in Hamilton for a while now. And then brought in a couple of new models and grew to over 100 vehicles. And then this year has been fun. We launched Auckland in February. It was about a 6-month ramp to get ready to launch. And so, you know, we have to order the cars well in advance, get them made over here and shipped out to New Zealand. What we did find happened is we launched right in the middle of the Omicron outbreak. So Auckland was an absolute ghost town. There was just no one there. And I was just sitting there watching these cars on the road. But pleased to say it's been bloody stronger since then. So Auckland, 1.5 million population, which is a really good test case for a good city launch. We started with 50 vehicles. Not too long after that, we brought on the Model 3, the Polestar, two so good high-end electric vehicles, as well as that one of the engines. So I'm not sure if they're really making any traction over here, but effectively Chinese manufacturer, which we get quite a bit of in New Zealand. And currently looking at BYD, so again, Chinese. And they're coming in about 20% lower per unit cost to Model 3 and Polestar. The other key part of that, what else did we go on here? Oh, yeah, the fuel charging, the fuel and charging integration. So we built it into our own app. Very, very clever. When a customer pulls up to ChargeNet, which is the largest charging infrastructure provider, fast charging in New Zealand, they can open the Mevo app. App knows exactly which car they're in, where the what charging station they're closest to, and then step by step takes them through. So you can turn the, activate the charging station, you know, charge your car, and our app will let the customer know when it's fully charged or how far through it is. Yeah,
so
and then
is the customer paying why this is happening?
Yeah.
Oh, they pay for the car, but not for the electricity.
Yeah.
So we include the electricity.
Yeah. The other thing in here is integration into kind of the journey planner space. So either Auckland Transport, their public transport app, so people can jump up, see where the buses are, where the trains are, and also where all of our cars are, and then it just loops back into our app. And the same with Transit, which is a global provider. So I think they're Montreal-based, right?
Yeah. We also did something as part of rolling these cars so often. You know, we're swapping out parts of our fleet. We're swapping out every kind of 5 to 6 months, and so it's very important for us to streamline as much as we could the installation of the viewbox. And so the things that we invested in terms of fuel and EV charging in the app, that was really after getting, you know, card key holder. All the other accessories, if we can remove anything that we can put into our app, then the viewbox becomes very simple. We just have the box, you know, the antenna and the GPS, and we connect it, and that's it. And it's a much simpler installation. Usually we can fit it all on the driver's side without needing to take too many panels off. And so it just means that, you know, if we're swapping a couple of hundred cars a year, we can save, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes on each install by having everything in one spot in the car. It's a real value for us in terms of...
So you switch every 5 to 6 months?
Some of the fleet, yeah. We have on a sale and buyback agreement where we buy them new at a discount and sell them on with no depreciation. Yeah.
And then saved it for last, but one I really love is, when we launched Auckland the first month, we delivered 4% utilization, and by July, we were at 21. And that was no paid advertising either throughout that time. That's what that looks like in terms of growth. You can see the 20 to 21 was a bit slower, a little few things going on, but we still managed to grow through. But yeah, 156% compounding annual, so over the last 5 years. Bit more than doubling, which I always like. And then today, 200 cars, bit over that, 3 cities. 22,000 members. Monthly active users is still a little bit lower than we like, at about 15. We target, I think we had it at about 25, didn't we, for quite a while, pre-lockdown. Yeah, Wellington, gross margin positive, 30% utilization, but that's also kind of a growing fleet. If we were sweating the fleet a bit harder, we'd get that probably closer to 35, 37. Not as many trips per day as a lot of you see, but our trips tend to be a fair bit longer, particularly in Auckland, you know, 70-minute median trip time. And so we are actively, you know, we recently did a price increase and swayed the increase quite heavily onto the per minute. So actively, effectively discouraging those shorter trips, because we find the relocation costs and associated costs for those trips are quite a bit higher compared to the kind of couple-hour trips.
And the reason we put these two numbers up there is that the 25-minute median doesn't really tell you the whole story, because the mean is 3 hours, right? So it tells you it's like a very long tail of long trips on that graph. Like, we have, you know, trips that are like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, many that are kind of a week, several days, a lot of trips that are like a day or 2 days, and then kind of right up to sort of, I guess, you know, half of our trips are under 25 minutes, but the ones that are above, it's like a really long tail.
Yeah, the other thing on this, and I know it's kind of a reoccurring theme that we've heard and really appreciated from a number of other operators this week, positioning ourselves in the city, we don't want to be seen as competition for public transport. We actually really want to be seen as supporting a car-free or a car-light lifestyle, which means, you know, effectively the right tool for the right job. And in the partnership, in the spirit of partnership with the city, this just gives us massive, effectively social contract to operate, which is something we you know, dearly value. So we thought what could be quite interesting is discussing kind of key differences to some of the stuff that that we're doing to what we see internationally. So we'll spin through these quickly.
We have five different models on our fleet of 120 cars in Wellington. So it's, you know, very, very varied in terms of smaller than a lot of you might have, and, you know, how many cars do you have for each model. We also, we can't get, you know, we can't order 200 or 300 new cars in the same colour in New Zealand, because you just destroy the market for residuals of that car in that colour, because the market is so small for new cars. And so we have to just take the spread of colours that the manufacturer wants, right? Which means a few things. It means that our branding needs to be probably quite small, work on different colours, more manageable, more kind of ubiquitous. Also like pricing, service design, we need to support bringing on like multiple new models a year and kind of rolling the fleet on and off as we go. So we've integrated seven models with Velox, so we've become quite experienced, I guess, with working with the VBox, working with the ICT team, you know, from a 10-hour time difference and 12,000 miles away, which works really well. And, you know, I think it's props to the VBox team a lot on that, because it's very easy for us to do that now. And all of this really is a result of the vehicle market in New Zealand. You know, if we were in a different country, we could do this quite differently, but, you know, the necessity means that we just have a very varied fleet. And our customers really like it as well, being able to have, you know, everything from a cheap little town car to sort of a more higher end.
Do we ever look at your financials by car type? So
everything, utilization, financials,
and
trips.
So on which car do you make the most money?
Usually the mid-market, so the Kia Sonic, the MGZST. So people, the Polo, for example, in Wellington, it's like 50-55% utilization. So those cars are out rented for like over 12 hours a day, every day. And so a lot of people look for those, but then they go for these next ones, which, from our perspective, they don't cost much more to operate, but we can charge a much higher price because it's a bigger car, so we get a lot more margin.
We often joke that people come for the Tesla and stay for the Kia. You know,
but then I understand you well, that you sort of make your money on still on the gasoline cars, not on the electric cars.
The BEVs do have a decent margin, and it's growing, particularly as we're pushing into, say, like the government fleet. So New Zealand government, as an example, has 15,000 cars across the country. Unsurprisingly, terribly utilized, cost the taxpayer way too much money, so on and so forth. So we're seeing more and more mandate from government to pick that up, but in the consumer side, we're seeing about a 10%. You know, the network can properly handle about 10% premium vehicles, because, you know, New Zealand dollars, we put these guys on at $30 an hour, the BEVs, and then, you know, we're down at 19 and 22 an hour for the mid-size. The other thing is, with the Volkswagen Polo, smaller cars, we intentionally keep that price quite low, largely from a political perspective, to keep a really low entry point for access, and that again supports that social contract to operate. Two other key things on this: the branding. You know, we really, wherever we put in our language, we always say "Your Amiibo." We always focus the ownership, at least conceptually, of the vehicles back to the consumer. And then keeping the branding quite small. It's small and kind of looks cool, but it's not over the top. So it's not immediately obvious, and that, you know, that makes them feel much more like it is their car when they're using it. And from a vandalism standpoint, we can't really prove, but we suspect that reduces our incidence of vandalism as well, because it just looks like a normal company car. The other thing, which we haven't really touched on, is that all these are, you know, petrol or battery, they're all climate positive. Their net carbon position is negative at the end of their life, which we love. You know, so it's actively restoring rainforests around New Zealand every trip taken.
I guess number two, operating multiple service types at the scale that we're at. That's sort of like, I think we took on quite a lot of complexity with that, it's fair to say. You know, with 200 cars to be running two different service types, and running a super booking for 15 cars is like, yeah, it's I'll be honest, it's a bit of a headache, but it's definitely interesting, and we consider it to be a really good investment in, I guess, our strategy. How we see it is that for us, part of our strategy, you know, one part of it is becoming a true national brand in New Zealand, and so really rolling out, including to the smaller towns and cities in New Zealand, at least, say, you know, 10, 15 cars over time. And that means that we need an operating model that works for a small number of cars. But yeah, I guess our vision in New Zealand is that really you can go to any major town and you can find Amiibo there, and you know, however you got there, there's a car there that you can then use on a model that suits. So yeah, we took the Loop name from the car share that we acquired from Ebit, turned that into part of the brand, and then we've come up with Flex for the free floating. So we talk about those quite separately, but we have them in the same app, and customers can sort of switch between quite easily.
This also supports our hypothesis that in time, mobility will actually look quite a bit like the airline industry. So in New Zealand, we've got the regional aspect of Air New Zealand. It's not big, but it feeds into their international quite well, and it provides just important infrastructure for the country. And so that same thing, and that actually brings us quite close to a lot of our key customers on the B2B side. You know, they'll have big offices in Auckland and Wellington and Christchurch, and then small regional, you know, be it construction consultants or big architecture houses or something like that. So being able to service that one client as a single provider in all of their key offices really fits in quite nicely.
Yeah, we do a lot of different types of trips, and we really, as well as pulling from, like, you know, we use Vlogs B2B stuff, so we're B2B, B2C, but also we do really, our pricing is set up for all these different types of trips, so obviously minute pricing, right, across town, hour pricing, we have a day rate. We also have done quite a lot of work with Vlog on some sort of customizable time range based capped pricing, where for us between 6 p.m. and 8 a.m., the price for a given model of car is capped at the rate for 2 hours. And it means that often we have, you know, our utilization continues into the evening because people will take the car from the city, you know, short drive out to the suburbs, they keep it overnight, they bring it back to town in the morning, ready for our business clients. They put it right by the office where it needs to be, right? So it helps us with relocations and things like that, as well as generating, you know, significant revenue on each car that gets taken away in the evening that we wouldn't otherwise get. A lot of airport for us. In Wellington especially, it's like 15% of our trips to and from the airport in Wellington, so it's very high. Yeah, really important for us.
We don't have a train lock here.
Yeah. Yeah, no train in Wellington. And until like 2 months ago, there was no bus either to Wellington Airport. So like, yeah, how do you get there? Figure it out. Take an Uber. Take an Amiibo. Yeah, schedule a trip. We've been using that for, I guess, maybe almost just over two years. I can't quite remember. We had it before COVID. We were testing it out.
We had Radar running.
Well, we had it branded as Valet initially, yeah.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
But yeah, so as was discussed yesterday, you know, for us, we charge $9. You pick a place, you know, radius around it. We either deliver the car or allocate it automatically. We've just launched last month our insurance product as well. So that's another, you know, big revenue stream for us that's starting to build up. So that's like we pushed our insurance excess from 1,500 New Zealand dollars up to 2,500. And we've now introduced two tiers underneath where it's like, $1 an hour for, is it 500 excess, and $2 an hour for zero excess. We've seen really good pickup on, yeah, basically right across the board, business, consumer, on that.
Finn's got the numbers. It's not populating through to our normal dashboard that I watch, so it's a surprise for me, and this will be our first full match.
We're going to find out.
It's a present for us at the end of the month, so yeah.
We know what we're holding.
One other thing on this. Originally, a couple of our board members and some of our background, Wellington has a really strong energy industry. And so one of the key learnings we've taken from the energy industry is considering our network of vehicles, much like a energy grid, right? And so you've got this idea of baseload Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, off-peak times in the evenings, you know, and a lot of that learning and thinking and energy pricing, you know, because there's solid energy trading sector in Wellington too, you know, starting to think about how we can vary our pricing, but not in a way that's directly visible to the consumers, discounting, right? And that's how the different products have come about. So in line with that, the B2B side, we started setting the, okay, well, we've got consumers who are spending, you know, $100 on average a month with us. How do we actually start filling the Monday to Friday, those big 5 days that could underwrite the entire thing. And just getting business clients, we were seeing a bunch of them start to stall out as they grow to about $600-$700 a month, and then their growth would stop. And so we did a whole bunch of customer research and figured really how we could solve the problem is just replacing a pool car for them. And so we came up with the idea, much like a virtual server, having a virtual fleet car, just really getting that base loaded. The other thing we started focusing on is just strong B2B sales directly. So just cold calling and lots of email, automated email threads and things like that. One of the first things we came up against, though, was them being worried about supply. Even though we know, we could tell them that, you know, on average, our vehicles were 2 minutes walk from their office for the last year and a half. They still wanted that guarantee, because whoever the decision maker was, you know, effectively putting their internal reputation online to do something new. And so we came up with just a service level agreement, and it's, you know, it's 400 meters from their office. We can programmatically report on it, and we say 95% of the time there will be a car within, you know, 4 minutes walk of your office. We really don't spend much time enforcing it. It just happens pretty organically, but they're willing to pay extra for it. So, you know, hey, we'll take their money.
I was just wanting to ask whether you somehow do anything to ensure that there are always cars there. Do you sometimes rebalance it so they can bring cars there? Or?
Yeah, we programmatically, I think we're doing it every 10 minutes at the moment, but we monitor where all the vehicles are by, you know, the APIs, and we check and then we say, you know, is this SLA, is it like right on the edge, is that car maybe going to go soon? And we have Slack notifications, we have a channel for our team where it's just, yeah, we're looking to get to the point where we can like raise tickets in the back office as well and then have them go through Fleet Manager programmatically. But yeah, at the moment it's Slack, so the team can look and they can see kind of, you know, red, green, orange type across the city, and so when our teams are relocating, they have an idea, okay, we need to move some cars over here, you know, in the next hour or two.
So yeah, this is what it looks like. It's effectively 20 fungible car days. So, you know, if their team needs one car on Tuesday, no cars on Wednesday, three cars on Thursday, you know, it just, they get what they need, and they don't have to worry about the car sitting around costing them money throughout the week. And we're seeing really good uptake on this one. It does take a fair bit of education because it is fairly new, but we keep publishing case studies and we keep effectively just building this social proof around the idea. And we suspect we'll have, within a couple of years, the majority of the government fleet moving on to, away from traditional fleet onto virtual fleet.
Yeah, I guess the last thing, we build quite a lot of software, so we have a relatively small team, 5 people including me, who do build our product. So that's, really everything that Mevo customers use is now built in-house. So we have our mobile apps, we have front office web apps that the customers use as well. All of our email that the customers see, everything is all from us. We really consider IMO to be not just a product, but a true platform for us. And it lets us build stuff on top, connect things on the side. You know, we can do a lot of very customized stuff these days now that we've got kind of these basic things. You know, we have the apps, so we can add features and things like that. We use all the APIs. We use the event notifier. So if you don't know about that, it's super, like, really super useful. I can talk to anyone who's interested more about that. For us, really the focus is, I think it sort of touches on the conversation yesterday about acquisition and retention. Like, for us, it's like, where are people getting tripped up? And because of how we do our customer support, it's ticket-based. So every ticket, every time a customer talks to us, it's triaged and it's tagged very, like, aggressively. So we have very good reporting. We can say, hey, you know, over the last 6 months, there have been 15 customers who have parked in the Clearway and had that vehicle towed. And we can say, look, we can see, and we can go back and we can say, when that happens, they stop using Mevo. Because we on-charge them $160 towing fee, right? They feel like they were cheated by the app or something, and they stop using Mevo, and we lose all of the rest of our customers' spend for the rest of their lifetime. So that's where we focus in the product that we build, is we say, well, look, we want to retain those people, and we want to remove all of these negative experiences so that the car sharing is just easy and it just flows. So this is an example of one of the big things we've built, which is like every parking space or zone in Wellington where you can't end your trip, we have that geo-fenced, and it's a separate to the home zone, and it displays like a warning in our app. So it says to people, hey, you know, it looks like you might be parked in a clearway. The clearway might not be operating right now, but it will be later. And if you know if your car is here when it is and it gets towed, you're going to be responsible for that. So you need to just make sure. And because of the GPS accuracy, I think, you know, we touched on that yesterday, we don't have it as a, you know, you can't end your trip there, because again, we accept the car might be one space over, and that's the difference between being in and out, right? So, but things like this, it's really like with that operating knowledge, and you know, we can look through our customer data and through what's happening, and we can then really translate that back very directly, and we can see after we build features like this, you know, we might have had 5 a month and then 8 a month or something, and then it goes to 0 a month, right? And it's like, that's what we're really looking for. So we, yeah, that's, I guess that's sort of our philosophy. We're not trying to build every single thing, because we do have this incredible platform that we sit on top of and that we get to take advantage of. But yeah, for us, it's really like, what are those really high value things?
Thanks for listening to us.
Do we have some questions?
Yeah, so basic insurance covers, it's with an excess of $2,500 New Zealand dollars. So, you know, something happens, they cover the first part, we cover anything above that. But what we've done is effectively just when you're starting your trip, you can elect to have standard, which is, you know, $1 or $2, which, you know, the standard takes it down to a $500 excess, and the $2 an hour takes it down to zero. Yeah. We'll tell you at the end of the month.
Yeah, surely we just launched it, but yeah.
This insurance thing is not back to back with your insurance providers. It's basically you taking on the additional.
Yeah, no, it's our insurance book for the excess. So we saw the model. There's a company called Cover Genius, who integrated into Bookings.com, and they just did excess reduction for rental cars, grew to 100 million in 3 years. Genius. Very inspiring.
You talked about the virtual fleet for business customers. Would you allow them to use their own logotype on a car or something like that if they want to, I mean, for their brands?
So we always get it during the sales process. We always get this question, and it's usually the CEO who has a great pride of the 20 cars sitting around doing nothing, costing them money. With their brand on it, and they think it looks really good, not really dumb. We used to take a hard line. We'd be like, no other branding on our cars. What we do now is it's a bit cheeky. We just go, oh yeah, that absolutely understand the brand and wanting to have representation. There's this amazing new technology that's come out recently, which we'd really encourage, you know, collaborating and you looking into integrating into your business. It's called a magnet. You can put it on the car, and that gives that empowers them to continue to feel like they've got control of their brand when they're using our cars. Truth of the matter is, we've never seen a magnetized logo on one of our cars, but that's all I've seen it in multiple board reports or you know, business cases that do go into selling the virtual car. So the first question was, how are we registering customers?
Yeah. So is it personal or
Right. Yeah, right now it is about 5 minutes, right, Ben, at the moment?
Yeah, the plan is by the end of this year, but for sort of the 80%, you know, again, 80-20 principle, for 80% of customers, we'll be able to approve them in real time, instantly. Yeah, so we use Acuant, we use some AWS SDKs, but yeah, we have our own registration flow to check people's licenses and do a selfie and things like that. Yeah, so at the moment, it creates a real-time notification. So between, you know, what is it, 8 and 8 that we run out for 12 hours a day, we have our support team kind of, I guess, on and not by emergency phone. And so during those times, it's like a couple of minutes because the notification comes in, they do it right there. And that, at the moment, it's just really, they're just checking a couple of final things to match. And it's helping us to build up enough data so that we can do that with some machine learning once we're
on your own, or are you using an external provider?
The main one's Accurant, yeah. So they're a US-based provider. They do all the licenses and passports for us, and then we do some other stuff on top.
And the same with business. I mean, we figure if we're going to get millions of people on this thing, like, if you add the human cost time of that, you know, the length of your sign-up times millions, that's a really big cost you're asking from society. And so the same with business. We integrate into the New Zealand business number database, and then we can pull a whole bunch of information straight from their API. And so the same with the business. I think it's about 5 minutes to sign up. And literally, you know, in probably the 80% of the time, it's 5 minutes from sign up to having access to a car. And then we've got, what we do is we, because I think New Zealand having fairly high trust in society helps with this, but effectively we're sure of the data when people are coming in. We get them in with a decent amount of trust, but we also have a whole bunch of fairly automated red flag events that we're constantly looking for in a programmatic and process, human process way, to catch bad actors really early and de-escalate those situations before they become, you know, very costly. And so that means we can effectively turn our cars into paperweights, which get really boring if you're trying to cause trouble.
Intercom, which is like a live chat CRM tool that we've really, it's pretty crucial for us, but that's baked into our app. So that's tier one support all the time. And we have, we have three shifts a day that we run, but the two overnight shifts, it's basically like half is that you're sort of expected to be up and on the tools, and the other half we have a phone like escalation. So if somebody's on the road, we do have 24 hours of support, but we basically split it out so that, you know, anything that's not urgent, we say to people, look, if this can wait till the morning, then just, you know, you go through a ticket and you open it up and we'll sort it out for you in the morning. If it's urgent, if you're on the road, pick up the phone, we'll answer it. We have a call tree and everything that goes right across the support team. But we really try and do, because we know that like the phone thing, you know, it just really doesn't, it doesn't scale that well. We're an exclusively phone-based support. We've modelled. And so having a ticket base and just able to do kind of real-time chat that gives people a sense that they're getting help. And, you know, there is someone real there talking to them right away. But it means you can manage multiple customers in parallel as well.
Yeah, the other thing we've got is even before they get to a person, though, is a chatbot in there. So that means that people can get to the right information really quickly, or our team has all the information. And that means the actual cost per interaction is, I think we dropped it by about 70% when we put the chat bought in for those conversations that were still coming through the people. But, you know, that was based off a whole bunch of analysis of thousands of conversations prior. And so based on that, we knew what, you know, 60% of them would be about, you know, subject A, 20% about subject B, and we could easily get the right information to the people really quickly.
Yeah, thanks for the presentation. You mentioned yesterday you had a shareholder.
Yeah, I mean, it took investment to grow the company, so I think we managed to do it with very little investment, but not none. So that was very helpful.
Yeah, and I guess the other part of your question, we really haven't had very much support from them in basically anything other than money. We don't really,
not despite trying.
Yeah, it's sort of hard, you know, working, you know, they're like huge petrochem company, like, and without them having sort of like a majority stake and a controlling interest, from their perspective, it's like, you know, I guess it can just be quite hard.
Yeah, I'm not seeing this like, okay, this is our next business, we just want to do anything with our gas stations.
Yeah, I don't think we're quite there yet. They have just spent the last year being bought by the biggest Australian petrochem giant, so their mind is really not in kind of what's in the future. Their mind is like, how do we not, you know, fall off the back of the economic truck.
The other thing that I think is just important to acknowledge is we fiercely protect our pace, and we're really conscious in our process that we run internally as a team. And so we find it's effectively at times like speaking different languages, and when we try to get into projects with them, they just don't really align in terms of pace and process. And that's okay, you know, like, I think it's acknowledging that and then we're pretty happy with the results we're delivering, so we keep doing it.
I promised the last one. You have a large variety of models. Do you provide basically like onboarding tools to mostly deal with the customers on the current account, right?
Yeah. So as I mentioned yesterday, right information at the right time. And so when someone reserves a model that they haven't used before, and we can see exactly which cars they've taken, you know, so it's a trip count per model. I think that's right, Nathan.
Yeah.
And so if it's a zero trip count for that customer in that model, then we service them a carousel with a basic intro guide.
And we've done quite a lot of we've done things like, for example, get students from the university who are studying user experience, get a team of them in for 3 months on like a project, and have them work with our customers across different models. And so we really have some quite good work that we've done in terms of like information architecture, like what do people actually, like what do they already know getting into a new car, and what are the really important things that we need to highlight. You know, we don't need to say to everybody, oh, the indicators are on the left or the right, because people can work that out, right? They want to know, how do you start the car, how do you connect your phone, like is there anything like very different about this car? So for the Tesla, we point out some very different things, but yeah, it's really, we've done a lot of work there as a necessity of having such a broad fleet to make that onboarding experience for people quite smooth when they get into a new model.
In the app?
In the app, yeah.
Yeah. We tend to take quite a long investment approach to some of this work. So the complexity of that many cars is not without its costs. However, we feel like building a platform for the, you know, at least in principle, in the long run, the majority of people using a network approach to mobility, that's going to be mandatory. So we'd rather spend a little bit more upfront on that type of development than let not having that hinder our growth in the future.
One of the big things that we like to do is to keep things simple, and so that's why, you know, we have the same permanent price on all the cars. The only thing we change is the hourly rate. The day rate is 5 hours, the overnight rate is 2 hours. You know, it's like you don't have to remember so many things. So yeah, our minimum age is 21. We've talked about bringing that down to 18, but we sort of get into this territory of like the cost benefit maybe isn't there for us yet. But yeah, we don't really see any, like, our customers tend to mostly self-select in terms of like people who are, you know, going to be maybe slightly higher risk drivers. They're probably not going to bother because we have so few like Polestars and Teslas. They're not really going to go and find one. They're just going to grab the closest car, and that's probably going to be one of the kind of mid-market models.
Yeah, the other thing is really the red flag events. You know, so we probably see a pretty similar user curve to a lot of you, where users will build their growth, overspend slightly, come down a little bit, and then plateau when they know kind of what fits well within their budget. And so we'll see, you know, someone who's not going to be using the Tesla regularly jump in on the second or third trip, and then, you know, we won't see regular Tesla use again after that point. But they'll get that one bill, and they'll be like, ooh, move back to the Polo.
Yeah, but we use like the like other speed events from Gear, really good for us. It's really good correlation, like if somebody's speeding and it's one of their first few trips, almost definitely like bad actors straight away, so we can lock that right down. And we have very good, very strong developed processes now internally for like red flags. We do like, if your first couple of trips, if it's in your first few trips from your customer, it's more than one day, we do like preemptive billing at that point to check if your payment method is working and all that stuff. So we just have like basically a daily sort of, you know, stack of checks that get run through by our teams that are monitoring the fleet. And yeah, we're really trying to just go through and say, look, who am I? Because we know there are some people there, right? There are always people there who are going to cause trouble in some number. So yeah, we probably have, I don't know.
I'd add to that, though. I mean, you know, one of our core philosophies is not that there's bad people, it's just that people make bad decisions and sometimes aren't allowed to, right? And so, and that differs from a lot of society, but we hold that value pretty close to our hearts. And so we find if in the pretty much in the moment someone realizes that what they're doing isn't okay, and we know, and we let them know. So the overspeed events, they get a message that says, hey, we saw it, 3 strikes are out. The behavior actually pretty much, the majority of the time, stops straight away, and they just carry on behaving as they should within the community. And so I think that's really important in terms of the role we as mobility providers play in our cities. Is, you know, that's safe for the users and safe for the broader community. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you.